Thanks for joining us this morning. I appreciate everybody getting up early and listening to Law Matters. I've had quite a week. I've had my internet service has been out for over a week now, and CenturyLink can't seem to fix it. Does anybody know about a internet company that maybe has better service? Send me an email or something. If I ever get internet service back, I will switch. On the radio this morning, we have Bill Rowe, who at one time was an Electoral College representative. And we have Kim Challender, who is running for Pima County Recorder. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
How are you guys doing?
I am terrific, and you sound good, too.
Good. Good. It's not been easy staying home and staying healthy and trying to work from home with no internet service. And I'd do a whole segment on this, but we're not allowed to swear on the radio. So I want to talk about what's going on. Let's talk about the census. How does the census affect us, and what do you want people to do, Bill?
It is critically important that every single resident in Arizona, and that's resident, it's not a registered voter, it's a resident of the state, that they fill out their census form and send that form in. And right now, Arizona is lagging behind the national average a bit in people who have turned in the census. Now, that's a problem nationwide. I know New Mexico has a very similar problem. They're lagging behind. And this is really, really important for Arizona, because one of the simple things that the census is used for is the allocation of federal funds to the state of Arizona. And if the census shows us with fewer people, then we have get less money allocated to us for federal highways or federal health care issues, et cetera.
Would this affect the Stone Garden funds that, you know, the county supervisors seem to turn down every time it comes up?
Well, it probably would not affect that directly. Those funds, they've been, you know, discussed and fought over for some time, and those are sort of past history. Redistricting is going to impact things in the future.
Okay, explain what the redistricting is. Why are we redistricting?
The U.S. Constitution requires there to be a census every 10 years, started back in like 1790. And based on that census, you reapportion the congressional seats that each state is entitled to. Now, Arizona started out at statehood in 1912 with one congressional seat, and it stayed at one congressional seat until 1940, at which point the population had grown enough that a second seat was added. And then in each census for some years after that, we added an additional seat up until the last census in 2010, when we added a ninth congressional seat. Now, those seats are important because they, the number of electoral votes that Arizona has in the presidential election is determined by, you get one vote for each U.S. senator, that's two, and one vote for each member of the House of Representatives. In our case, that's nine now. So that would give us 11 electoral votes when it comes to the Electoral College. Now, when the census is complete, and that's up in the air now, what that date will be, but we get to a point, and as of now, it's still reapportionment will happen the end of 2020, and that will determine if Arizona's grown enough to get an additional seat. Right now, we're lagging way behind in people who've turned in their census forms. And this is really important. And again, this is not registered voters. It has nothing to do with party at this stage of the game. It has to do with simple people who are residents of Arizona. That's what the Constitution of the United States requires.
Can't you go online and fill out that paperwork?
Yes.
Okay, because I never got anything in the mail for census.
Well, you should have, but you definitely should go online And I don't have that address in my head. Kim may have that.
Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. Good morning.
Okay. Can people, do you have the address for going online?
I do not have it directly.
So if you just
Google. But I'll definitely get it in just a second because I do have internet. So
you must not have CenturyLink. Who do you have?
You know, I actually do have CenturyLink.
Well, then I'm going to move into your house.
It's 2020census.gov. We'll definitely get you there. And you can hit the respond. It's not too late. Just respond. There's a great big button.
So if people have a house full of people, they need to account for everybody that lives in that house, whether they're registered voters or not.
Correct.
6 months in one day. Yes, correct.
6 months.
If you have someone sleeping on your if you have someone sleeping on your couch for 6 months in one day, that's exactly what you should be doing is counting them. You can also do it. You can respond by phone also. That's the other option. And I do have that number too if you'd like it.
Sure. Absolutely. Let us have it.
It is 844-330-2020.
So they couldn't have made it more easy. If you have internet service, then
again, Gary, the census is so important. The top thing people think about is how many congressional seats will Arizona have, and that will come into play for the 2022 election. And by then, the redistricting should be finished. And also, the census is running late, but then. Federal funds are allocated by these complicated formulas, but they depend upon the census results. And we don't need to go into the weeds on that, but just be aware federal money is allocated, and the fewer people who have signed up to be a resident of Arizona included in the census, the less money that the state of Arizona gets for all sorts of, major things like roads and bridges and education.
Well, we need our roads fixed. You could lose your car in some of the potholes here. So, yeah, that's really important. If you've got people living with you and they've been there for 6 months and a day, they count as an Arizona resident on your sofa. Right, Kim?
Exactly. Exactly. And a lot of people worry about the census information not being private, and it is. I believe it's 72 years that the census holds that information, and it's not allowed to be used in any other means. So it is a safe way to make sure we get the money for our state and
Be counted.
Right.
Be counted.
Yeah, 72 years ago, that census data has just been made public, and that goes back to the census of 1940.
They just made the census public, so this is something Ancestry.com is going to use.
Undoubtedly.
There you go. So there is a purpose here. You want to be counted.
But in 2010, the last census, we had 6.4 million people in Arizona, and we're looking at 7.3 million is the estimate. So it is definitely a big deal, and we got to get everybody counted to make sure we get the monies needed.
So how does this affect your office, Kim? How does this affect the recorder's office?
Well, the recorder's office, most of the information is, what we do is after the fact, so for voters. So once the mapping is taken care of, once the Independent Redistricting Commission of Arizona does all the mapping, then the Board of Supervisors takes over the County Board, and they do their mapping, change precincts. Then the initial maps they take our data, the voter data, and make sure that everything is good and that everything is represented properly. And then we go back and they'll readjust maps if needed. And then we have to make sure the data is correct in the system for the 2020, as Bill said, the 20, for the 2022 voters.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Bill Rowe, a former Electoral College representative, and Kim Challender, who's running for Pima County Recorder. How do you think the coronavirus is going to affect what's going on with the census?
Well, a lot of people are not going to answer their door when somebody comes, because the next phase in the census, and which they have not done yet, they've done everything by mail and online so far, and then they had to go into sort of a quiet period while we were shut down. But this next phase will be look at who has not yet replied, and it will be having census workers going door to door. And this, who knows how that's going to work this time. But there are some people who will be reluctant to, open the door or talk to somebody at all. The census workers will certainly have masks and, sanitizer and that sort of thing. They don't need to go into the house. But what they're doing is chasing out those forms and telling people how to get in their census form so they can be counted, whether online or by mail.
So it'd be easier for everybody if they had to go to the library and use the public library, which probably I'll have to start doing, to get internet service. Yeah. Then they can just go on to 2020census.gov, fill out the form, and you won't have some creepy person knocking on your door asking questions.
Well, they won't be creepy.
Are you sure?
But it'll be somebody that you may not know. And
well, that would be creepy.
Important, get those forms in, because Arizona, we've got a lot, we've grown a lot. Last census in 2010, Arizona had grown more than any other but one state. And so we were up, I think it was 24% in population.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know what the estimate is this time, but we, all reports are that we should get a 10th congressional seat this time, which gives us more clout in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Okay, that makes sense.
Well, we're definitely, to build on that, the census has put out another schedule as far as when they're going to do the in-person, and April 2nd was when they were going to start doing in-person, and they've pushed that out to July 1st to September 3rd. So they've definitely pushed out the timing when they're going to go knocking on doors. But that's still, at this point, still anticipated to be on the schedule to be able to do. So they're just, right now, they're training. They're making sure people know what needs to be done, the census workers. They're having to hire more census workers because there's a lot of the census workers are in that high-risk category and have decided not to participate. So they're reevaluating training and making it safer, for sure. You know, they want to make sure that everyone is safe, including their workers.
Yeah, and I understand some workers decided not to do it because of the coronavirus.
Yeah. And, that's something that needs to be looked at. And, it's good that, they understand that they need to take the right steps to stay safe
and protect everybody.
We are the seventh largest. Arizona is the seventh largest in growth rate of the states. So we are growing faster than most other states, for sure.
Wow. Okay.
Sherry, one of the immediate impacts that will show up, not in the presidential election this year, but in the next presidential election in 2024, will be how many electors Arizona will have to cast ballots. Now, I'm assuming there, people have talked about changing that for 200 years now, but it's a complicated project to change that. But right now, when you vote, even this November, when you vote, you're not voting for a candidate from one of the parties. You're voting for the electors. And Arizona will have 11 electors. And this is confusing to people. Those people are selected. Now, every state has different rules. In Arizona, it is the major party chairs that make the decision of who the electors are. And I'm willing to bet, and this question sort of got raised the last time we talked, but I thought I would just read out the names and see, you can try to see how many of these electors that were on the ballot in the last election, you recognize. The Republicans, they had 11 electors. One was the first on the list alphabetically. It was Bruce Ash from Tucson. Then Walter Begay Jr., I think he must be Navajo. Sharon Giese, Robert Graham, a former chair of the Republican Party, Alberto Gutierrez, Jerry Hayden, Carol Joyce, Jane Pierpont Lynch, Foster Morgan, James O'Connor, and Edward Robeson. Yeah, most of those names most people will have never heard of, but that's who you're actually voting for if you vote on the Republican side. And on the Democratic side, it's Delia Carlisle. Delia is a member of the Aktin tribe, which is halfway between Phoenix and Tucson. Gabrielle Giffords was one of the electors. Pamela Grissom, who the head of Arizona List. Luis Heredia, who is a former executive director of the Democratic Party. Roberta Revelis, who was a former chair of the ACLU in Arizona. I was on that list. Naomi Story, who is very active in the Asian Pacific Islander voting group. Alexis Tamaran, who is a former chair of the party. Laverne Tarkington. Corey Woods, who just has been elected to the Tempe City Council. And then Peterson Zah, who is a old line Navajo chairman, and also he's on the faculty, I think, at ASU. But Peterson is the grand old man of Navajo politics. But I just thought that would be of interest because it was a question we edged into last time. And that's who you're actually voting for when you'll have your ballot. Now, the names have not been selected for this year by either the Republicans, I don't think they've done it yet, or the Democrats. But that's supposed to happen sometime in the next month or so. And then those people, they've got names, you've got to be certain forms filled out, and the names have got to be verified and then into the Secretary of State in time to be on the ballot in November, the printed ballots.
Well, they're calling it kind of close, aren't they?
Well, every year it's close. And for the parties, you know, you choose those people. It's often a sort of a recognition of gratitude for somebody who is, in my case, I had been a chair of the state party. And in Luis Heredia's case, he had been an executive director. Robert Graham on the Republican list, he had been a chairman of the Republican Party. And those names, you need a balance. You need a geographic balance. You need an ethnic balance. And it's an interesting process how you select the actual electors. But frankly, most people don't know names of most of the electors. And they're just simply voting for the presidential candidate, either Trump or presumably Biden.
Okay. That's a lot to digest. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to play, I don't know if you had an opportunity to listen to the show when I had Congressman Colby on. But he had an idea about the Electoral College that wouldn't require changing the Constitution. We're going to play that segment so you can hear it and refresh everybody's memory when we come back from the break. We'll be back in a few. Okay, we are back. And our guest today, Bill Rowe, a former Electoral College representative, and Kim Challender, who is running for Pima County Recorder and actually worked for the Recorder's office for several years and has been mentored into this position for running for recorder. And before we start talking about that and gerrymandering and redistricting and everything, I want to go back to what Congressman Colby had to say. He's one of my favorite congressmen. The man's brilliant. John, can you play that segment for us? I want to ask you a question that actually started a row in the studio here a couple of weeks ago. Some people feel the Electoral College has outlived its usefulness. What is your perspective on this?
Well, sure. I guess maybe I'm a bit of a, some would say I'm a dinosaur. I don't believe that's true. I mean, I think the Founding Fathers created the Electoral College for a reason, and that is parts of it have outlived their usefulness. It's not necessary. When it was created, the idea was we couldn't know. There was no mass media. We couldn't know who really were the best candidates. So we elected people that were local that we knew, and they would go to Washington, the state, actually, to cast their ballots for whoever they thought was the best candidate to be president. That was the idea. But the numbers idea, I think, still works today. That is that the electoral votes are based on two for every state, based on the fact of the Senate, that there's two senators for every state. And then the rest of them are on the base on the number of representatives they have. So it's a combination of the states and population. And that, of course, is exactly what our Founding Fathers had in mind. That was the great compromise of the Constitution, was to balance all the rights of population against the rights of individual states, of smaller states. And I think it works in that sense. Now, you could abolish the need for individual people to go to the Capitol in Phoenix and cast their ballot for, let's say, in this next election for Donald Trump or for presumably Joe Biden. You could eliminate that and just have it automatic. Whoever carries the state carries those electoral votes. One other thing that I would favor, which would, I think, make states more competitive than they are now, is if you divided those electoral votes up on the basis of whoever carries a state wins those two electoral votes that are based on the Senate. And then each congressional district goes to whoever carries that congressional district. That would mean that you would have competition in a state like California. Right now, a Republican isn't going to bother going to California to campaign because there's no way that that state is going to go Republican. But if the electoral votes in San Diego or in the Central Valley could go Republican, or in parts of Orange County and in the LA area could go Republican, they would campaign in those parts and areas in order to win those electoral votes that are assigned to each of the congressional districts. And that's kind of what you've been seeing in those primaries that the Democrats have been doing, where it's based on the number of delegates are based partly on the statewide who wins the state and partly on who wins the congressional districts. So I think that's one change that could be made, and that would not require a constitutional change. I think talking about abolishing the electoral colleges is useless conversation, because it would require a constitutional change, and for sure.
Bill, what do you think about his idea?
Well, two states do that already, Maine and Nebraska, and they don't have many electoral votes, but it seems to work for them. It would make the reporting of election night a little more complicated for the networks, but it works. It seems to work in those two states for the last couple of election cycles.
So they haven't had that for a long extended period of time. They've just recently changed their electoral college to report that way?
Relatively recently, yes.
Okay. Do you think it would level the playing field for all the rest of the states?
Well, it would certainly make, as Representative Colby said, it would make candidates needing to visit states quite, you know, much more frequently, and they would focus on the congressional district. For instance, in Arizona, several of our congressional districts are much redder than the others, in spite of the redistricting efforts, and some are bluer than others. And so the presidential candidates would focus on those. And in California, where there are so many electoral votes, they certainly would, you know, Trump presumably would go only to those districts that he had a chance of carrying, and the same thing for Biden. And California is, of course, the biggest single electoral vote treasure. And then shortly, and I forget what the order is, but New York State and Texas are pretty close behind.
I think it would eliminate what they refer to as flyover states. I mean, you know, you would have candidates actually coming to your state and to your areas to talk to you, talk to your constituents, instead of, oh, they're not going to vote for me, and they fly over to the next state. And I think that's so disrespectful.
I agree with Bill. I think there are some changes that need to be made, and we need to look at it. Obviously, Senator Colby, he knows the process, knows what it takes, and we need to look at all options. At this point,
I think you're
and
right.
I don't believe that we can have just a popular vote in that you have California, New York that are overwhelmingly populated in that sense, you know. And we need to look at it a little closer. But if we can do it within the Constitution, as Senator Colby had pointed out, that would be
a good way to go.
Our best option for sure.
Easiest way to go. Let's talk about the Independent Redistricting Commission.
Ah,
yes.
That is Arizona's way to do redistricting. That was by Citizens Initiative, Proposition 106 in 2000. Arizona led this option. Other states. And prior to this, Arizona would have, the legislature would be in charge of redistricting, but we have an independent redistricting commission that there's two appointed Republicans, two Democrats, and then an independent that the four choose. And the independent is the chair of the commission.
Okay, and why are they redistricting? What's going on? I thought that only happened with the census.
That's exactly it. It does, and that's when it'll happen. It happens every 10 years. And in 2015, the Supreme Court upheld our Independent Redistricting Commission, and there were arguments saying that it wasn't legal, but it absolutely, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld it, so...
And the reason that redistricting will be going on is in the 10 years since 2010, the last redistricting, there has been enormous growth overall in Arizona, but it's not evenly spread. So, for instance, in the West Valley in Maricopa County, there's huge new populations there, different demographics, the same thing in parts of the East Valley where they have changed dramatically. Now, rural Arizona has grown some, but nowhere near as much as those parts of Maricopa County. That's where the really big, big growth is. And so that new 10th congressional seat will have to be, reapportionment will force the next commission to figure out where to fit that new district in. And then there will be other districts that... may get larger, and some may shrink just a little bit. There's one district that is, it's very, very cumbersome, but our District 1 covers a huge area. It goes from the Utah border down to the Mexican border and from New Mexico on to the west, and it's an enormous district, which is very, very hard to campaign in. That currently is held by Democrat Tom O'Halloran. It had been held at one point by, there's been a couple of different people over the years, but it's a very unwieldy district. If you think about trying to campaign in that, It's just outrageously difficult.
Yeah, that district is interesting because I think it covers 10 counties of the 15. So, yeah, there's a lot of travel.
Wow. That's pretty huge. Okay, talk to me about gerrymandering.
Well, gerrymandering is manipulating of the boundaries in favor of one party or another. In June of last year, the Supreme Court they decided it was beyond the federal reach of the government to deal with any of the cases. So they've pretty much put it back on local, the more state courts to decide gerrymandering cases.
And is there anything going on right now that we should be watching, or is what's going on?
I was, over the past 10 years, cases have come up throughout different states and within Arizona, but I don't know. I don't believe there's any cases going on currently, is there?
I don't think so. And the next step will be at the end of this year, when it was scheduled, is what they call reapportionment. And there the census is completed. Now, if the census, there is discussion of the census being delayed, but those census numbers, they come out and they will tell us how many districts we will have going into the next decade. And the census is very important because it determines our how many, legislative seats, but how many congressional seats. And it determines where the boundaries of the legislative districts are going to be. And this is a intensely fought over issue. But redistricting, that's at the highest level. It will be, how do you divide up the state to accommodate, assuming we get the extra seat, 10 congressional districts, and then what will the boundaries be of the 30 legislative districts in Arizona? And that is a massive, massive task. And the commission that will decide that hasn't been chosen yet, and that process will start sometime early in 2021.
Before the coronavirus hit, did they anticipate the census to be more effective for this year's election?
Well, no, because there was the worry that a lot of minority communities, particularly the Latino community, was worried about what Trump might do with the census. Would there be a question asking, were you a registered voter or not, for instance? And people, particularly minorities, were very concerned about that and whether that will depress the people who fill out their census form or not. I don't know.
Now, that's a good question. And
the citizen question was taken off the census. That was one of the other questions that was going to be asked, that, or they proposed, that did not happen. So I think getting the messaging out is probably a little more difficult now with COVID. Obviously, it's going to be more difficult with COVID, but it was still going to be a struggle to make sure that everyone understands that the census information is kept confidential for 72 years. It's still that struggle in the particular communities, for sure.
So there's no question on there about your vote, if you're a registered voter or what your citizenship is. They just want to know how many people live in that house.
Correct.
That's
6 months,
correct.
One day.
what the U.S. Constitution has said since 1790.
So you can't change it. You can't change the Constitution just because you want to know if they're registered voters.
Huh. That is true.
Exactly. And that's the funny thing about the census, if you look at it, it's every 10 years. So they don't take into account voters in the census because your fourth grader will be voting before the next before the next census. You got to look at it that way also.
That's true.
So obviously they're going to do some determinations as far as voting goes, but you also have to look at the demographics there too and the numbers.
Very cool.
That probably scares a lot of parents. You know, they're looking at their fourth grader right now thinking, huh.
Yeah.
They're going to be voting soon.
Buy an insurance so we can drive. So that's fun. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Bill Rowe, a former Electoral College representative, and Kim Challender, candidate for the Pima County Recorder's Office. And we've been talking about a myriad of things, mostly the Electoral College and redistricting and the census. And I just want to find out, nationally, you know, the census has obviously has a huge effect. Do you think all the states are going to get a new seat because of all the growth that's going on, Bill?
No, because the House of Representatives has been held to 435 seats for decades and decades now. So there's no growth in the House. So there's not room for every state to get a new seat. You'll see growth. It is projected that California, which has grown in every census recently, will not add a seat this time.
They're all moving to Arizona.
Well, a lot of them are. And we'll certainly see additional seats in the Rocky Mountain West. Hard to project how many. And then Florida well may get an additional seat or two. But then those will be seats lost probably in New York State and some of the Rust Belt area, where they have been losing population partly because of horrible winters, and so they're moving to a sunnier climate, but also job issues.
Yeah, there's a big issue right now with employment. How's that going to affect everything?
You're now jumping over to the election itself and where the electoral votes do come into play, but they won't change for this election this November. They'll be the same they've been for the last decade. That's why this census is so important, because that determines our legislative districts and congressional districts for the next decade. And people don't seem to understand that that's 10 years out. And we are locked into those legislative districts and those congressional districts for that decade. And so that's why it is super important that people register for the census.
And they couldn't have made it more easy. 2020census.gov. And you just fill it out. I did it. It took me like 2 minutes. Filled it out. All done. And we won't have anybody knocking on the door asking questions. So everybody should go do that if you have internet service. I'm sorry. I'm so frustrated. So tell me about... Go ahead, Bill.
Go ahead. No, you go.
Okay. Kim, tell me, what is it like having to resign from your position at the recorder's office to run for office?
It was extremely difficult to have to resign, especially resigning in this big election year. You know, I had to get a lot of things done. I worked a lot of longer hours to make sure I could, because my tasks didn't go away that I had to do. So a lot of stuff was just preparing in advance, making sure things were ready to go. And then when the COVID hit, obviously things just got scattered and changed. And but, you know, the office runs. We've been planning the 2020 election since
the last
2018.
Election? Yeah.
right. You do. You're continuously planning for the election. So it makes it so you're able to make the changes. You know, you deal with any issues that come up much easier when the planning starts.
I don't think people really realize the logistics.
Our current recorder, F.N. Rodriguez, has served for over 25 years now. And she has built that recorder's office into one that is nationally recognized by both Democratic Party people and Republican Party people as one of the best recorder's offices in the country. And so we need to make sure that we continue those high standards that Ann has established over the years.
Absolutely. It would absolutely creep me out if we put somebody in there that had a personal agenda and started using it as a political platform when it's supposed to be neutral.
You really do need to be, it is a nonpartisan platform when the recorder has is obviously a Democrat. FN Rodriguez is a Democrat, but that does not come into play when it comes to elections at all. You got to have the integrity of elections have to stay intact. And that means taking out the partisan
attitude.
Partisan politics.
Yeah.
And attitude. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way about law enforcement. They shouldn't be. I know we have to elect a sheriff, but they need to be as apolitical as possible because otherwise it's just not fair. It's not fair.
No, it's one of the most refreshing things about hiring for all the intermittent workers. We have to hire 150 intermittent and temporary workers to take care of the election. And we try to make sure that it's about a third, you know, a third Democrats, third Republicans, and then a third other.
Am I considered other? Since I'm an independent.
You're an independent. So doing that, it's so refreshing when you go down to the ballot processing center and you see we all wear lanyards that say
other.
What party designation you are. And it's so refreshing to know that everybody can work together as
yes.
a team, as one, to accomplish one goal. It's
yes.
just, it's an amazing process.
Something I think they've lost in Washington. Dead
well,
silence.
Not in Pima
Nobody
County.
Wants to say anything.
Well, not in Pima County. I guarantee you that is not the case. And like I said, it's just really refreshing. And I miss it. You know, you ask me how I'm doing, and boy, do I miss the people. I miss the process. I miss, I look forward to making changes. The changes that I see can benefit. Most of them are technology, because that's the next step, and
it's where we're going.
We can move forward. Yeah.
And I know you've really stayed up on cybersecurity issues and how to, you know, keep everybody safe and keep the vote safe. I've listened to you, I've seen you at meetings, and it's just something that, you know, really needs to be done. It's not okay, we're gonna get ready for the election a couple of months out. This happens as soon as this election's over, they're gonna prepare for the next election. And like
it's day to day. It's actually a day to day thing. We're working with the Department of Homeland Security, the Secretary of State, National Guard, working to secure all aspects of the office, including the recording side, because there's a lot of personal data there. Also, you know, as far as mortgages and title
work,
title companies go, all that. Yeah, there's a lot of personal data that needs to be secured.
So you're on top of it. I know you're proactive, you know, more proactive than reactive, which is awesome, because that's what you need in this position. And like I said, if anybody has a political agenda, that's certainly not where I would want them plugged into. So I want to talk a little bit about the outcomes, the potential outcomes of what happens with the census and how it's going to maybe affect your job. Kim, what do we expect happening in the next couple of months before the election?
Before this coming up election,
right.
As far as, are we talking redistricting? Would it?
Yeah, redistricting. Are they doing anything prior to? Is all this going to happen afterwards?
There won't be anything. That's all the census and the redistricting, all that'll start at the end of the year, for the numbers are sent to the president, and that's when all that happens. So nothing's going to happen as far as they're all set right now. So nothing's going to change in that sense.
Okay.
In the office. It's all set. But this is, and as Bill said, this is the future. For the next 10 years, the census will determine.
Have an effect on us. And I think people really need to know that, you know, hey, you're talking 10 years down the road. This is our roads, our schools, our everything. If you don't have your voice counted as far as, you know, going to the 2020census.gov and filling out the form, then, you know, you're depriving everybody of funds that come our way for the next 10 years. And it's all based on what you're telling us. And we did have a caller ask if they, on the census, they wanted to know if they asked if you were transgender.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know where that, it was out of left field, but we want to address everybody's questions. And, you know, they don't.
Well, and I wouldn't mind doing one little plug, if possible, for the permanent early voting list and voting by mail. You know, with the COVID, the census isn't going to change anything for this particular election or these next two elections coming up. We have an August primary, and then we have the general election in November. But we don't know, and nobody can predict what's going to happen with the COVID crisis right now. So if you call the recorder's office, you can get a ballot in the mail for both elections, and that phone number is 520-724-4330. And I would have loved to have seen an all vote by mail elections, but the legislature, they've signy-died, and they're not going to deal with that issue. And then, you know, there's always the governor can do an executive order, and we'll see where that goes. But just to be safe,
30
voters,
seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sign up for the permanent early voting list or call the recorder's office and get a ballot in the mail.
Okay. Another fun thing that happened this week, my alternator went out on my car, had to be towed. Arturo, who's the owner of Precision Towing, towed my car to Acura. So Arturo, he's a great guy. If you need a tow, call Arturo. Until next week, I want everybody to stay safe. I want to thank Bill and Kim for coming on the show today. And have a happy and healthy stay-home holiday weekend. We'll talk to you next week.